Blog Talk Radio.
To the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Reverend Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week with programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Soapbox Witch with Onyx. You had a choice and you chose to spend your time here. Thank you for joining me on this magical journey of thought seed farming and music. Good evening, everyone. My name is Reverend Onyx, and I am your host for the next little bit on the Soapbox Witch. Here on the Soapbox Witch, you will hear me say the things that need to be said. Now, you're going to hear opinions, you're going to hear facts, you're going to hear thoughts. Most of all, thought seeds. Hopefully, what we're going to do is get you thinking. That's the entire edge. We want you to think. I don't care if you think like me. I just want you to think. Now, before we launch into the show, I want to let everyone know that Spiritual Unity Radio Network is here 7 nights a week. At 10 o'clock Eastern Time, we have several excellent shows in the lineup. On Sunday night, you can catch Lady Elizabeth Hamilton on Sacred Divergence Radio. On Monday night, you can catch William Wrigley with Visions of the Past. On Tuesday night, you can catch Reverend Terry Power HP with the Terry Power Hour, Lord Terry Power Hour. On Wednesday night, you've got me on the Soapbox Witch. On Thursday, Terry and I get together under a shady tree to see what we talk about. It's always an interesting conversation, and we'll see where that goes tomorrow night, so make sure you tune in. On Friday night, we rebroadcast Terry Power's episode from Tuesday night. On Saturday night, you have me back here again with LCO on BTR. Now, the two shows, The Soapbox Witch and LCO on BTR, have two separate formats. My co-host on LCO, on BTR, is our lovely priestess here at Lady of the Circle in the Oaks, and that's Reverend Willow. For the last several months, she's not been able to join us because of our new baby son. Hopefully soon she will be right back with us and bringing her love and joy and personality back to the show. She's got wonderful insights and a wonderful way of telling about those insights. So hopefully she'll be back with us soon. Until then, she sends her love and shout outs to everybody. Now tonight, as we talked about, as you already know, we're going to talk about a topic that I call the real history of Wicca. Now, the idea tonight is not so much actual, well, it is actual fact, but it's an interpretation, just as all history is. Now, we know that few Wiccans these days actually believe that Wicca is the religion that was practiced by Paleolithic man. I mean, we know that. But if you do a search on the internet, you'll see that there are several sites where this and many, many other glaring historical errors are said to be true. Some will tell you that the cave drawings that represent a man with horns or an ancient artifact that's a female figure are depictions of the Wiccan god and goddess. Some will say that Wicca is an ancient Celtic tradition. This is all bad history based on bad research of a couple of authors and creates a history that is just not there. Many are using this flawed paradigm to interpret everything they find. So thank you for joining me for the real history of Wicca. You had a choice, and you chose to spend it with me. I'd like to say that I appreciate everyone listening, either live or in the archives later. If you like what you hear, then let other people know. If you don't like what you hear, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. A couple of addresses where you can reach us. The station's address is surn.org@gmail.com. That's surn.org@gmail.com. So if you have any comments, moans, groans, gripes, bitches, compliments, or complaints, you're welcome to send them there, and the management will get those out to whoever you wish to address. If you want to address one of the hosts, then just make sure that the host's name or the show's name is in the subject line, and we'll make sure to get it out to whoever you wish. If you want to talk directly to management, that's fine. You can send that there. My email address directly is revonyxhp@ladyofthecircle.org. If you would like to know more about Spiritual Radio Network, I invite you to click over to spiritualunityradionetwork.org. There's a up-and-coming budding website there. If you would like to learn more about Lady of the Circle and the Oaks, just go over to ladyofthecircle.org. Rev Terry Power has his own personal venture out there, a personal page at RevTerryPowerHP.com. Be sure to check that out. And all of our shows have Facebook pages attached to them. And instead of going into all those, if you would go to ladyofthecircle.org, click on the CERN tab, S-U-R-N, you can see a link to each of the Facebook pages for each of the shows. And I encourage you to go to those Facebook pages and like them and follow them. That way you can keep up to date on what's coming down the tube for each of the different episodes. So as we go forward, there's little evidence to suggest that Wicca was around little more than a century ago, much less thousands of years in the past. But this whole concept of trying to put ancient things in modern context, whatever that modern happens to be, whatever time period that modern happens to be, is not a new problem. I mean, the ancient Greeks, when they discovered mastodon and dinosaur bones, they claim to have found the bones of the heroes of the Trojan War. Fossilized bones of dinosaurs were used as evidence for the existence of dragons in Europe and in Asia. So, and I can go on and on, and I'm sure that eventually William, our armchair archaeologist, may touch on some of that. So I'm not going to steal any of his smoke when he goes there, but I wanted to touch on that. So that you understand that what I'm talking about is not a new problem. We always interpret everything through the science of our own age. We increase in scientific knowledge, and as we increase, the increase in scientific knowledge, I guess what I'm trying to say, has boomed exponentially throughout history. Our ability to go back and interpret evidence is so much greater now than even a century ago, exponentially so. And there again, in a century from now, it just stands to reason that our ability and our means will probably seem quite quaint to those looking back. Now, consider this. Consider for a moment if you were a young archaeologist a few decades ago, several decades ago, and the hottest book that you've read in years claims that there was an ancient religion, and it gives archaeological evidence to the fact. The book was written by someone with numerous degrees and printed by a respectable university press. You know, maybe by reading this, you're not completely convinced, but on a dig, right there where the author tells you it should be, you find evidence to interpret for that religion. So, chances are, you're going to believe that you found more proof of that ancient religion, and you publish your material in that vein, thus adding to more bad history. Margaret Murray's The Witch Cult in Western Europe is just such a book. That book was single-handedly responsible for using unrelated evidence as proof of the existence of Wicca, of the religion, of the witch cult in Western Europe. A lot of the evidence that was portrayed or put forth in that book actually came from the trials of people that were being tried for witchcraft during the witch craze, what is termed the Burning Times or the Inquisition Times. And the book became almost single-handedly responsible for a new religion that followed the liturgical calendar and the ritual structure that was put forward in that book. Now, Murray has an impressive resume, which she touts very boldly, by the way. She uses extensive quotes in French in the book, and these French quotes are often translated badly. She uses scientific language, but she doesn't use scientific method. The book just exudes quotes and evidence. It's just overwhelming. So is it any wonder that the lay reader could actually believe that there's a mountain of proof for her theory? Now, what the book actually is, looking at it through a modern lens, is a collection of tangentially related history being used to prove a theory. It's sort of like archaeologists who see evidence of any flood as proof of the literal truth of the Bible. She had an agenda to push and a strong desire to win people over to her view. Now, Wicca, as we know, had a new life after World War II. And we're going to get into psychosocialism here, just as psychology or social psychology here for a moment. Now, Wicca, as it came forward, helped those who saw modern religion as having failed to create a new religion for themselves. And the book framed the witch craze as an act of oppression against a people. The book helped deny the deep-seated fear that maybe the witch craze was nothing more than an action of mass hysteria brought on by the lies of charismatic leaders, which, incidentally, this fear would not allow Hitler to be written off as an anomaly. Now, we're going down the road of modernist thought tonight. Many modernists will believe and will say that early modern Wicca exploded after World War II as a reaction to the sociological and the psychological research that was being done to explain the Holocaust and, to a lesser extent, the use of atomic weapons in Japan. They will tell you that Wicca, if it is viewed primarily as a British invention, that you can easily see how it would have had a sort of soothing effect on the population of that country that had survived the bombing during the Battle of Britain. Furthermore, it reduces the witch craze again from several atrocities fueled by hysteria and charismatic leaders to a systematic attack on an oppressed people. And as I mentioned before, It inadvertently had the effect of allowing Hitler to be written off as an anomaly. Now, understand that the whole Holocaust was fresh in everybody's mind at this time. The horrors of the Holocaust were very fresh in everybody's mind. Interestingly enough, by creating the story of a people who would stick by their ethics even under torture, it answers a challenge of a specific study that was done by a man by the name of Stanley Milgram on the topic of obedience. Now, this study showed that 65%, a full 65% of otherwise normal people tested would administer what they thought were severe and even deadly electric shock to people who had done nothing to deserve this torture, just because a person they perceived as an authority figure told them to do it. 65%. Religion can help deal with difficult questions and discomfort with society. So while we let that settle for a moment, I'm going to break us off into a song. So just think about what I've said so far, and we're going to go into a song by Dars the Bard called Merlin Am I.
Land and the sky. Oh, little trembling one. Under this thin blanket, I can find no repose. And since the Battle of Arderis, I no longer care if the sky falls or if the sea overflows.
Forest is calling him from a field soaked with blood, where hundreds lie dying for the people that he loves. Now he runs in shadows and madness, the future reveals that the island of Britain is Merlin's isle, and he lives here still. Merlin, am I? I know the secrets of the land and the sky, land and sky, and you'll hear my voice where the eagles fly.
And that was Darth the Bard, Merlin Am I. Our artists that you hear on these shows on this network have graciously allowed us to use their music. So please buy their music if you hear something you like, because that gives them the way to put a roof over their head and food on the table, and allows them to continue to give us and produce this wonderful music that encapsulates our way of thinking and our faith so well. You are listening to The Soapbox, which I am Reverend Onyx. This is the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thank you again for listening. As we move forward from here, we're going to delve a little bit into the psychology of religion itself. Now, Lama Tupten Yeshi, who is a Tibetan Buddhist, says, and I quote, "The only purpose for the existence of what we call religion is for us to understand the nature of our own psyche, our own mind, our own feelings," end quote. Rabbi Jack Moline, who obviously is a rabbi, a Jewish rabbi, says about the purpose of religion in society that the role of religion is, quote, "to be a voice for the ethical use of power." A Hindu website says in its mission statement, quote, "We believe that the primary purpose of religion is to ennoble man, to make him realize the true purpose of his life and create universal harmony, understanding, and brotherhood among people," end quote. Now, we are also aware of the purposes claimed by individual religions, such as to achieve nirvana, to achieve heaven, to avoid hell, to have a relationship with God, to do what he wants you to do. Now, beliefs about a religion's purpose is highly subjective. So discussing the relevance of a modern religion is even much more so. Does the modern religion of Wicca meet the purposes of religion? Does its status as a modern religion cancel out any of these purposes? Now, by looking at the fourth set of purposes listed, that I listed previously, the ones like achieve nirvana, to achieve heaven, to avoid hell, to have a relationship with God, etc., meeting these criteria would not be affected by the age of the religion. Doesn't matter how old the religion is, if it to meet these criteria, and it cannot be addressed directly without quantifying it, so that it can be proven to work or not to work in a replicable fashion. So it will not work for all purposes listed. We're reducing this down to scientific means. If you can't replicate it and you can't prove it, so there's no way to say this works or this does not work. Now, the first three are related. So if we take out the religion-specific language, such as heaven, hell, and nirvana, we can say that the purpose of a religion is to attain a particular afterlife. Now, as I see it, Wicca only succeeds tangentially at this. Since the practice of Wicca does not assure any sort of afterlife, but it attempts to give us the tools to attain the knowledge needed to make a decision regarding the afterlife and how to achieve that particular one. Now, this would be a failing of Wicca if other faiths had demonstrable proof that they got the afterlife of their choice and others did not. Now, understand that. It would be a failing of Wicca if any other faith could prove they got their afterlife of choice and none of the others did. Now, we've seen near-death experiences have happened to members of most religions that we know of without pointing toward the truth of only one. We see that the near-death experiences throughout different societies and throughout different religions and different cultures are different. So that would mean that near-death experience cannot be used to prove anything as far as which religion has the right answers, which ones work, which ones do not work. So that in and of itself reduces the near-death experience paradigm to use the near-death experience to prove. It reduces this to unverified personal gnosis, and it can't be used. Now, if we discuss the issue of to have a relationship with the divine, this is very highly achieved with Wicca. There again, it cannot be quantitatively measured because the relationship with the divine is very difficult to describe fairly. Let's face it, any person that has a very vibrant working relationship with the divine can only assume that other people who claim to have such relationships are being truthful. We don't know. We only know what's going on with us and our own experience. And since these people that have a very intense relationship with the divine exist in all religions, this can only be seen as a success of Wicca that Wicca shares with other faiths and other religions. Relationship with the divine is a goal of Wicca, so it can be seen as one of the core purposes of religion. So it does show Wicca to be a functional and relevant religion. Considering the part where we said that religion exists to tell you how to do what God wants you to do. Now, Wicca would fail in this only if mankind dictates what God wants you to do. Wicca attempts to make us as practitioners develop a religious and spiritual lifestyle that allows us direct contact with the divine. This may result in a relationship with the divine that also tells us how to live our life in accordance with it or shows us how to act within the divine will if it is applicable. Now, this part, that statement, is completely in line with Lama Thupten Yeshe's idea of the purpose of religion, especially if you see the divine as an outgrowth of ourselves and self-knowledge. It also fulfills how the Hindu website defines the purpose of religion. With Rabbi Jack Moline's less generalized purpose of religion in society, remember, and I quote, to be a voice for the ethical use of power, end quote, Wicca not only succeeds, but also succeeds better because it's a modern religion. And the reason it does this is because it does not limit its discussions of ethics and morals and religious structure to the past. So we have an unlimited idea of what power is and how we should promote its ethical use. Just take, for instance, the concepts, and I'm not going to go down the political or ethical route and argument here, but I wanted to point out what I'm saying here, kind of draw attention to what I'm saying. One of the modern dilemmas, ethical and moral dilemmas, things like stem cell research, things like birth control, abortion, things like this, and for older religions are tied to their codes, to their texts that come from an age prior to all this technology. So none of that was known of back then, so they're still stuck with that code in interpreting how it should be applied today. With Wicca being very new, easier for us to apply the new paradigm to those technologies, to those advances and everything. And like I said, I'm not going to go down the idea of what is right and what is wrong and morally and ethically. That's not my point on this show. Now, when we move forward, we talk about, I explained to you that I was going to look at this from a modernist approach. So, Onyx, what is modernism? Well, it's a little bit difficult to pin down to a very specific definition, but modernism can be described as the movement toward an accurate history of Wicca and paganism by quality secular research. The idea that this kind of research not only strengthens the community, but also strengthens Wicca and paganism by making the foundations of these faith groups indisputable facts instead of easily dismissed fantasy. And by that, what I'm saying is, if we go to someone who is well-read archaeologically, in secular world, and we say, hey, look, our religion is ancient. It was practiced by, you know, the Paleolithic people, and we have this and we have that and we have whatever. They're going to look at us if we tell them if we translate that as actual fact, they're going to look at us and go, really? You actually believe that? And we're going to be laughed at. So if we know what our actual history is, then we can show that as indisputable fact, it gives us a much more firm base in which to justify where we are now. Truth is discovered tomorrow. It's not made any truer by claiming that it has always been known. Let that sink in. If a truth is discovered tomorrow, it is not made any truer by claiming that it has always been known. Now, modernists say that we don't need to throw out all the books that don't support the modernist view, that we need to understand where these books come from and where these authors came from and why the books represent the history of Wicca in the manner that they do. We will talk a little bit in a moment about, you know, myth versus fact and what the purpose of myth and all is. We don't need to understand we do need to understand the importance of myth in Wiccan history and how it differs from the fact of Wiccan history. Now, let's go into myths here for a minute, or for a few minutes. Myth generally means a story believed in at one time or another by a group of people. Now, the definition of myth is very difficult to pin down as well. We're trying to establish a working definition here for what I'm talking about. It does not have the original meaning of myth, does not have the addition of the phrase no longer believed in by contemporary people. But the modern usage of the term myth talks of Greek mythology and Greek and Celtic mythology, but it talks about those that are still, the beliefs that are still held as religion, such as Vedic religion, Christian religion. So the original meaning of myth has nothing to do with no longer believed in by contemporary peoples to the general public. It should mean just a story or set of stories believed in at one time or another by a group of people. There is a difference between mythos and logos. Mythos refers to stories of a religion, such as the creation story of the Bible or the Epic of Gilgamesh. Logos refers to the rules and regulations of religions. Generally speaking, a single myth is a story and part of a greater mythos or mythology. So, what is the essential purpose of a myth? The essential purpose of a myth is to answer questions. Now, the types of questions that myths answer can roughly be grouped into four categories. And those four categories, and I'll go into each of them in a moment, are history, nature, etiological, and theogenic. History, the first of the four categories, attempts to answer by giving beliefs according to how the world came to be the way it is today. These range from such myths like the creation story of the Bible to the modern Big Bang Theory. Yes, we do have scientific myth. Now, unless we talk about the Big Bang Theory being a myth, it absolutely is. Under this context, because unless you have factual first-hand account, or unless you were there, all we have is the myth. Remember, we interpret evidence according to the science of our age. Moving right along to nature, which is the second category. This is related to history, but it explains how a natural event happens based on observation of the event and thoughts of how it could have happened. Concepts like Helios and his chariot pulling the sun across the sky, or fairies painting the autumn trees red and yellow. Now, these nature myths are made by a combination of three things. First of all, observation of the phenomenon. And then a lack of knowledge about the phenomenon. And then lastly, an opinion about why the phenomenon should have happened. etiological stories in myth explain human nature or creations in terms beyond the strictly rational. It explains why a thing exists because of or with divine sanction. It explains perhaps why a certain religious group came into existence because of an angel or an alien appearing to their prophet. Or it explains why the United States thrives because of the number of Christians it has. Or maybe it explains why a temple was built at a particular site because a god said so. Okay, I'm looking in the chat room right now. Hold up for a moment. Can I get a sound check over the air? I'm seeing someone not hearing the sound. Someone in the chat room, please give me a sound check. Thank you very much. Yes, the person in the chat room that can't hear us, someone type in there to let them know to refresh the page. Or possibly just go back out and come back in. I apologize for the interruption in where we're going with this. Thank you for the sound check, folks. Moving right along. Now, theogenic myths, they tend to answer the question about where the gods come from. This can be a part of the creation myth. Or maybe a nature myth, or maybe even a compilation of the ideas of the creation of the gods that came into being after a lot of the stories already existed in partial form elsewhere. Similar to the theogenic myths, we see myths about the creation of empires or countries, like the founding of Rome or of the United States. These are all myths. These are all types of theogenic myths. Now, the modernist realizes that these myths fulfill some internal need for understanding and should be allowed to stand side by side with fact whenever possible, as another part of the reality that's worthy of honor and recognition. Modernists generally view myth as not merely an answer to a question, but as a window on the people who created the myth. I mean, consider this. If you explore the myth, then you can understand the people who created the myth even more. And through them, you can understand their gods. And by understanding their gods, you can understand yourself even more. So myth has a very huge reason for being there psychologically. I'm going to take another short musical interlude here. And I believe we're going to go with something very funny here. Just as a break the tone thing, we're going to play Emerald Rose, We Come From Monkeys.
Darwin had a revelation. He said all life evolved from the confusion. He had a theory. It made some people nervous when he came to the embarrassing conclusion. We come from monkeys. We're not so special. We've only got a little extra DNA. The chimpanzees are very close to us. A thrill of physics. He's not so far away. We come from monkeys swinging in the trees. A little bit of monkey inside you and me. A monkey in the middle, a monkey on your back. It's a fundamental problem, but a scientific fact. We come from monkeys. Minded said creation was the answer. They got upset. Then those got out of joint. They say we're missing the monkey in the middle. They're picking it, it gotta prove the point. You're not so hairy, you haven't got a tail. You're not adapted for living in a tree. But if you care, count up all your chromosomes. You're 98.4% a chimpanzee. We come from monkeys swinging in the trees. A little bit of monkey inside you and me. A monkey in the middle, a monkey on your back. It's a fundamental problem, but a scientific fact. We come from monkeys. Double helix monkey bars feel the primal beat. 6 million years we've been walking on our feet. A barrel full of monkeys swinging from the family tree. We don't want to start a social revolution. We just want to talk about the monkey evolution. But the knuckles at your stool feeling cool to the slow of the sea. We come from monkeys. Can't handle the thought of evolution. You might just call it intelligent design. But if the universe keeps on evolving, then maybe you should just evolve a bigger mind. We come from monkeys swinging in the trees. A little bit of monkey inside you and me. A monkey in the middle, a monkey on your back. It's a fundamental problem, but a scientific fact. We come from monkeys. Monkey see, monkey do. Monkey see, monkey do. Monkey see, monkey do. Monkey me, monkey you. Let's go face it, it's up to me. Come from monkeys.
And there you have it, Emerald Rose. We come from monkeys. Now, yes, in the chat room, Blue Fire Witch said she wanted to point out evolutionarily speaking, we don't come from monkeys, but we share a common ancestor. Absolutely, we know that, or at least I know that. I hope our listeners know that as well. But I played it because it's a fun song. So also, while we were cutting to break, another of our listeners, who actually happens to be one of our hosts, One Raven, says that although it may be myth, it also helps strengthen one's connection to the divine, as well as the history of humanity. Absolutely. And if I did not bring that across in what I was saying, then I apologize. Myth does have a purpose, and it helps us connect. It helps us connect by culture. It helps us to connect to the divine. It helps us to connect to ourselves. It helps us understand the history of humanity, and both from a social point of view, from a social psychological point of view, and from a psychological point of view. So yes, it helps. So it helps run through all that gamut, including connection to the divine. Blue Fire Witch says that myth doesn't necessarily mean it's false either. Many myths may be based on real events. Yes, this is true. Generally speaking, what I have seen before is that myths are not as much based on actual events as what would be termed legends. And there again, in the academic world, there are a lot of differences of opinion on what is what and exactly how those different definitions apply. But I agree with you, Blue Fire Witch, and just because something is a myth doesn't necessarily mean that it's false. And I agree with you that many of the myths may be based on real events. They may have been elaborated on. They may have been embellished. They may have used their understanding of the time, or even our understanding of science of the day, to explain things that we don't understand. So let's move right along. And yes, if we start talking archaeology and everything, Blue Fire, not to cut you off, I am totally and completely interested with this, but that's a little bit out of my smoke for this show. But I would encourage you to get in touch with One Raven and tie in with him, because he does Visions of the Past, which is focused a lot on archaeology. And I believe things like that may be an excellent topic for him to go down the road of in some of his episodes. So, yeah, it absolutely, Blue Fire, I am not in the least trying to aside anything you're saying, because it's absolutely the truth. Now, finally, we're going to start turning our attention, and we're going to take a timeline approach to the development of Wicca. Now, obviously, when we're talking about a timeline approach, the dates that are given are very, very fluid. And the dates that I give you here are only presented for general illustration, just to give you an idea of about when these stages occurred. So please bear with me as I move through this, and as we go through each stage, I think you'll see where the development is going. Now, at stage one, we have what has been called pre-modern Wicca, and this lasts up to about 1954 or so. During this time, we saw a collection of works that did not use the word Wicca, but seemed to be very highly influential in the creation of Wicca. The books of this time, typical books of this time, include, obviously, Murray's The Witch Cult in Western Europe, the works of H.P. Blavatsky and Frank Podmore. British spiritualism, theosophy, the literary romantics, these primarily flavor the works of this age. So you're at this point, you're not seeing the word Wicca used, but you're seeing a lot of the ideas that become ingrained in what becomes Wicca put out there. Now, in stage two, we consider this, or it has been considered, early modern Wicca. It lasts from sometime around early 1950s, 1954-ish, on up through the very early 1970s or so. And there are some overlapping time frames here, and you'll see as we go forward. Now, early modern Wicca, this stage includes Gerald Gardner. This stage features the foundational works of many traditions. The religion has now become known as the religion now known as Wicca is almost exclusively called witchcraft, and its practitioners are called witches. Most of the ideology of the early modern Wicca dwindles to a trickle about the mid-1960s, but most people that look at the stages of the development, most modernists that look at the stages of development of Wicca, consider the death knell to early modern Wicca the creation of the principles of Wiccan belief. During this period of time, basically the belief that witchcraft is a singular religion and that Wicca, with one C, was discovered or promoted by Gerald Gardner. Now, at this time, non-Gardnerian authors usually insist that any difference between their practice and Gardner and what he professes is a result of a distance between the groups, or possibly even things that Gardner has hidden from the public as oathbound. During this time and at this point, the religion of Wicca is considered a single religion. The idea of multiple branches is just becoming prevalent, just becoming out. Different practices, even though there were different traditions, was still considered the same religion. Now, in stage three, we break it into two separate parts, and you'll see why in just a moment. Modernists say that stage 3A is listed generally as middle modern Wicca, and that lasts somewhere between the mid-60s up through about the 1980s. Now, early or middle modern Wicca is a reactionary movement, is generally seen as a reactionary movement to early modern Wicca, in which several new, quote, old religions, end quote, appear. As a reaction to Gardnerian witchcraft, these traditions teach that Gardner and his folks are nothing but liars or thieves, and that their own tradition is the true old religion of witchcraft. Many modernists consider this era to also be called revisionist Wicca. This thought and this ideology is mostly dead by the 1980s, but every once in a while, a little rear its head, you'll see it abound. Included in this stage are numerous works that attach a culture to Wicca and call it the ancient religion of that culture. And they justify the differences between groups of Wiccans that are the differences between, for instance, the Celts and the Romans. Now, during this time, you'll see that a lot of people will profess that the idea is that multiple traditions of Wicca exist, but that each individual culture has a true witchcraft of its own. Moving on to stage 3B, this runs concurrently and spins off about the same time as middle modern Wicca, and this is feminist paganism. This lasts the heyday of this lasts primarily from about the 1960s through the 1990s. A lot of people say that the feminist paganism sprang from the same source as middle modern Wicca. Feminist paganism is characterized by a female voice that speaks exclusively of goddess worship or may give just mere lip service to a god force. At its best, paganism spoke very loudly and very powerfully to a disenfranchised minority. It encouraged the exploration of a female deity form and was a very powerful force in and of itself, or still is. But at its worst, it claimed that any god, even the god of Wicca, was nothing more than the Christian patriarchal god. Early feminist paganism evolved into what is now known as modern feminist paganism. It also spawned a reactionary movement called Real Man, in which men were encouraged to explore their own god self. Where feminist paganism ends and Wicca begins is very difficult to pin down, but there are subtle differences between the two. That's why many modernists look at it as a different direction, so that there's some differences there. There again, that is not a judgment call on what, you know, this is a look at how things developed. Stage four, moving right along. Stage four is generally known by the modernists as modern Wicca. This lasts anywhere between the 80s to somewhere in the 90s-ish. There again, everything is plastic. Everything is fluid. Modern Wicca evolves with the knowledge of multiculturalism. It was a reactionary movement that looked at the intra-traditional strife of middle modern Wicca and encourages a peace by saying whatever works is acceptable. The idea that rituals and beliefs could be drawn from many sources as long as certain beliefs were shared amongst Wiccans was a very strong rallying point during this era. Many modernists consider Scott Cunningham to be the father of modern Wicca. Very prominent among these ideas of modern Wicca are the belief that not one tradition is any better than the other, and that petty squabbling between trads or between traditions does nothing but harm, and therefore is very un-Wiccan. As we move into stage five, as modernists see the development of Wicca, many modernists consider this to be postmodern Wicca. And that's what's normal, that's what's being seen for a large part now. It runs predominantly concurrent with the latter stages of modern Wicca, and even though modern Wicca is still in play, this is a reaction to the excesses of modern Wicca. Postmodern Wiccans generally see the whole do-whatever practice of the modern Wicca to have been turned, twisted, and mangled by newcomers to the religion. Postmodern Wiccans believe generally that the do-whatever practice of modern Wicca was not actually a do-anything, you know, do-whatever banner, but it was an encouragement to explore many avenues of faith while staying Wiccan. Postmodern Wiccans see Wicca as a very definable thing. They see Wicca as a core set of beliefs and practices that can be strayed from in research. But if you want to stay Wiccan, you need to stay. You would stay within the core set of beliefs and practices. Postmodern Wiccans are concerned with the cultural imperialism of later modern Wicca authors. This is what they call the cultural imperialism. Is what they call things like claiming that Wicca is an ancient Celtic religion. Postmodern Wiccans are concerned with intellectual integrity and are concerned with historical accuracy. They understand that the creators of modern Wicca, in their haste to encourage exploration by many people, stretched the boundaries so far that Wicca began to make no sense. Modern Wicca did not teach that everything was Wiccan, but that a Wiccan could study anything. That's what modern Wicca was about. But postmodern Wiccans see that as hitting the ground, as watering everything down in actual practice, so that it no longer made sense, that it was no longer cohesive. Postmodern Wicca agrees that Wiccans, that not everything was Wiccan, but that a Wiccan could study anything. But they also believe that if you're Wiccan, you should study Wicca first. Postmodern Wiccans are deconstructionists. They will go back and look at the rituals and see where the different parts of the rituals come from and why they're there. For instance, the watchtowers. Why are they there? From where did they come? That does not mean that a postmodern Wiccan will not use anything that didn't come directly from the Wiccan development, you know, directly through Wiccan development, but they understand where it came from. And if it works for them, they will use it. So, to reiterate, like I said, postmodern Wiccans will examine modern Wicca by taking it apart and looking at where the parts came from. And because of doing this and paying attention to things such as academic or intellectual integrity and historical accuracy, and shaking things down so that, you know, we can find out what is myth and what is fact, and understanding the difference, and understanding the importance of the myth, and understanding the importance of the fact, and being able to iterate that to people who question. So that as a Wiccan, they can defend the craft, they can defend the religion as a very viable expression of faith without going down the road of fantastical history and fantastical mythology and touting it as fact. They can say, these are the facts, this is our myth. We like the myth because of this. It explains this, that, and the other. Things come into play like allegory and such. So because of all of this, the postmodern Wiccans tend to be able to render a clearer and purer form of Wicca itself, of the religious belief in Wicca. I'm not saying that postmodern rituals are any more effective or any less effective, but they're able to talk about that religious belief in a manner that makes sense to those who, or can make sense to those who are outside of the faith group. And I think this is very important as we move forward in our evolution. We need to understand where we came from. We need to understand where we are now. And we need to understand where we may be going. If we are to stand side by side with other faith groups, we have to double our effort to know who we are. And this is a good segue into another little soapbox that I like to climb up on. When people ask, what do you believe? Don't answer with negative statements. You're a Wiccan, right? You're a witch, right? Well, what do you believe? Well, we don't believe in Satan. That's not what they asked. What do you believe? If you don't know what you believe, then I would suggest you figure it out. Look inside. Talk to the divine. Listen. Meditate. Whatever it takes. Research. Put it through the meat grinder, like I say. Listen to the gods. Listen to the goddess. Whatever. We need, absolutely, Rev. Terry Power says, we need positive expressions of faith. Yes, we do need to say, we believe this, not we do not believe. And that's exactly where I'm going with that. And I would even say that listen to the questions of what's being asked. Somebody says, oh, you're Wiccan. What do Wiccans believe? Then certainly we believe. But if they say, oh, you're Wiccan, what do you believe? Then it should be, I believe, and answer from a very personal point of view. You may mention that there are other beliefs within our religious umbrella, but listen to the way the question is asked and answer the question. What do Wiccans believe? We believe, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you're Wiccan. What do you believe? I believe. But before you can do that, you need to know what you believe. And for so many people that I have run across in the couple of days that I've been doing this, they can't tell me what they believe. And that's a sad thing. We need to understand what we believe. But we also need to understand that what we believe at this moment may change. Because as our paradigm shifts, our beliefs shift. And that is to be understood. Because as we grow, we change. And as we change, we grow. Kicking the soapbox out from underneath me on that one. I think everybody understands where I come from on that. I would like to thank you very much for being here tonight. This has been an exciting show for me, and I hope that it was for you too. If you have any moans, groans, gripes, bitches, compliments, or complaints, please get in touch with us. CERN.org@gmail.com, or check out the website at www.spiritualunityradionetwork.org. I messed that one up, so I'm going to repeat it. www.spiritualunityradionetwork. All together, long word, great site. It is up and coming. It is being built by none other than our Lord Terry, with the input from the hosts here. So I would like to remind you that Spiritual Unity Radio Network is on 7 nights a week, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and we are dedicated to the idea that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. You can catch the shows each night, with the only rebroadcast for right now being Friday night. But eventually, we hope to have that session filled as well. So please get the word out. Let everybody know we're here. I would encourage you to go over to ladyofthecircle.org, click on the CERN tab, look at where these Facebook links are, go to the Facebook pages, like them, follow them, so that you know what's going on from our different hosts. We have a good team of hosts here, with the exception of one slacker. We've got Reverend Terry Power, HP. We've got Reverend Elizabeth Hamilton, HPS. We've got William Brigley. And pulling up the rear, we've got me. So we've got excellent programming in store. Check us out, please. I would like to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. So as we end this show, I want to say to you, you had a choice tonight, or whenever you're listening to this in the archive, you had a choice of how to spend your time. And we are grateful that you chose to spend it with us. I am Reverend Onyx. This is the Soapbox Witch, and you are listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.